This is the Puck Podcast, the number one hockey podcast on the internet, the number one hockey podcast on iTunes, voted the number one hockey podcast by the Bleacher Report, and the only hockey podcast featured on FoxSports.com. With your hosts, Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
From the Fox Network Center in Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Coming up, we've got three periods of news to get you updated on everything that happened in the past week in hockey. In the first period, we'll talk about, of course, the latest in the negotiations for a new collective bargaining agreement to bring an end to the lockout. We also have news on a possible new arena for an Original Six team and a major celebrity challenging a legendary goon to a fight. In the second period, we'll check out news from the ice from our Minor League, European League, and U.S. College Hockey reports. We'll have a quick preview of the World Junior Championships, as well as a major milestone for a college hockey coach. Third period, we'll check in with our fan correspondents and read your emails, all that and more, on this edition of the Puck Podcast.
Ed, you don't sound like you're 100%.
No? No, I am not. And neither are you.
No.
You and I are both battling whatever. Flu, cold, whatever that stuff is.
Yeah.
So my voice is probably a little bit different, a little more gravelly perhaps.
And I will be coughing and sniffling a little bit more than normal, and I apologize in advance for that. I had a theory that there was originally one cold, and that person then gave it to two friends who then gave it to two friends and gave it to you, and it's made its way. It just keeps traveling around the world. And it's the same cold that just keeps coming back to us year after year after year, or variations thereof.
That's an interesting theory.
Much like I have the theory that wind never actually stops traveling.
Okay.
Just when the wind blows past you, it continues going around the world until it eventually comes back past your house.
Wow. Enlightening.
The fever has taken over my mind.
Yes. I can see that.
Did you make any trips to Arizona this week?
I didn't, nor do I have plans to anytime soon. But speaking of the flu, my wife recently got a flu shot and asked if I'd like to join her. I declined.
Why?
Because the only time I've ever gotten a flu shot, I got extremely sick right afterwards. Is it possible it was a coincidence?
Yes.
It's possible.
It's likely.
But... I'm talking sick. I'm not talking like now, you know?
No, I understand, I'm still saying, do you really, so you're blaming the flu shot
I do not get sick often. I'm a very healthy person, knock on wood. Obviously, everybody gets the sniffles and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I mean, like, I got to call in sick because I'm not getting off my couch and I'm thinking about going to the doctor. That's, to me, that's sick. The other stuff is just an inconvenience a little bit. So, yeah.
Well, I'm no doctor, but I play one here on the podcast. I can assure you that the flu shot does not make you sick. Just like if you go in and get vaccinated for polio, you won't get polio. It is a dead virus meant to boost your immune system and prevent you from getting sick. It is possible that you had already contracted the flu that season, had not suffered the symptoms, got the flu shot, and then, because it takes, I believe, 48 hours for the flu shot to take effect, you were already infested. But
well, you're not really a doctor, so
no. But doctors,
whatever.
I know doctors, and they all recommend and get flu shots. They don't. They're not trying to make the population sick by injecting them at their local pharmacy.
Well, whatever. I'll do my thing. You do yours. And but what does suck is I'm getting ready to go out of town on a little mini vacation. So would rather not be under the weather, in those circumstances. And I'm going to Pittsburgh. It is the Garcia Bowl, Karen's Chargers against, my Steelers in Pittsburgh. And the forecast is for rain all weekend. So, come Sunday afternoon, I'll be sitting out in the rain, hopefully watching my team win, but...
Well, they're playing the Chargers.
So yeah,
chances are extremely good.
I believe so as well.
Chargers find a way to lose this season.
Well, I'm going to guess in the cold and the rain, it won't take too long for them to go ahead and wave in the white flag and huddle around the heaters and
the season's over
with,
anyway.
Yeah, let's get it over with as soon as possible. So,
we've tuned out Coach because he's going to get fired.
And
are your seats not undercover?
No.
They're exposed to the elements.
Yes, we have actual good seats, so we are... down low, and we'll be in the elements. Last time we went, which was like 3 years ago, it actually snowed.
That's awesome.
So, and it was, you know, look, I was born in Hawaii and raised in California, so it was a unique experience for me, and it was kind of one of those things where I said, oh, yeah, I've seen a game in the snow. I don't ever want to do it again. But anyway, but my wife said something to me. She's like, oh, we're not going to go get to see a Penguins game. And we always try and work in, when we go on these little football road trips, a hockey game as well. We saw the Penguins and the Sabres a few years back when we went to a Steelers-Chargers game in Pittsburgh. 2 years ago, we went to Seattle for a Seahawks-Chargers game. We popped up to Vancouver and saw a Canucks-Ducks game. So that's another casualty of the lockout. Is
well, what about Wilkes-Barre Scranton? Or is there anybody even nearby?
Not interested.
All right.
So just another little blow, I guess you could say, a little punch in the stomach. Thanks to the lockout, will not be able to take part in that. So a little bit sad about that. So. All right. Anything else you want to share before we get into the show?
Not that I can think of.
Real quick programming note. bless you. This show is being recorded Wednesday evening.
Yes, December 5th.
It will be posted Thursday morning. Once we're done with this show, by the way, we're doing it in the evening instead of in the morning because my work schedule has changed. I'm working 3 extra hours now because one of our update anchors is on maternity leave. So instead of being able to get off work, come here and meet you before your shift starts and do the show, we're now doing it after your shift. So Thursday morning in the AM, this will be posted.
And I believe it.
I'm
predicting that the show will already be horribly out of date.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's going to be difficult because I don't think between, let's say, 8 a.m. Pacific time and 4 a.m. Pacific time, anything's going to actually happen.
I'm saying my prediction is that we will get major news on the lockout after we record this show.
All right. Now that I could see.
I've got Twitter up here and am updating frequently, and they are... Well, we'll get into it.
Yes.
A press conference is expected later tonight.
Well, I hope it's better than Gary Bettman's press conference earlier today.
Would you like to recap that while I blow my nose?
Gary Bettman said, I am encouraged by what's going on. I will take no questions. Thank you. Pretty much that's what
it was.
Well,
let's get into the first period.
Yeah, let's do that. Go ahead.
There's a reason that he probably didn't have much to say. So let's drop the puck on the first period. Here in the Puck Podcast, and we start in chronological order, of course, and we start back on Monday when a couple of Vancouver Canucks had some comments, and we start with Henrik Sedin, who told the Vancouver Province, quote, I think from day one this has fallen into what we really thought was going to happen. I don't know if the owners think they're dealing with kids or that we're stupid or think the fans are stupid. It's a little mind-boggling when you see what's coming out of their side. I want to hear a change, that they're actually going to give us something in return for the things we've given them. I doubt that may happen tomorrow, but it's a start. It's good to see that there are new owners coming into the meeting, but the bad thing is there are still some of that tight group that has been there since day one, and that's a concern. End quote. He's talking about the fact that, per, I believe, Gary Bettman's suggestion, the owners and the players get together without Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr being in the room. A group of NHL owners and a group of NHL players get together. Bill Daly and Stephen Fehr would be in there to represent each side, but otherwise it would be their discussions and they would get the main people out of the room. And he believes that's a good thing, but not that great a thing. And defenseman Kevin Bieksa, who has had plenty to say throughout this, said, quote, that's the one thing we've been... They're wondering what the NHL owner's agenda really is, and he says, that's the one thing we've been puzzled by in this whole negotiation. When do they want to settle, and what do they want to settle for? Is it just a money issue, or the contracting rights, and what are the reasons for them? Owners doing it face-to-face with players on their team and to look those guys in the eye, it should be good. Then on Monday night, I sent you a text message because there was... Steve Ballard, I believe, posted to our Facebook wall, facebook.com/puckpodcast, the greatest source for hockey information on the internet. Ed, would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yes. He posted a link to a report out of WBZ in Boston by a man that you described as someone I've never heard of. And that was Steve Burton, who we've now learned is the guy that broke the story years ago that Phil Kessel had cancer. So a guy that has, we offer that just to say that he has at one point broken hockey news in the past. He reported on TV that he had a source that the owners and players had already met on Monday night and that a made significant progress and that a deal was basically imminent. They were going to get together on Tuesday, and by Tuesday or Wednesday, we were going to have ourselves an announcement that a deal was done. And 90% of the hockey world, I would say at least, said, I'd love to believe that, but I have no idea who that is and why is he the only one reporting it.
Yes, absolutely.
Bill Daly then came out. He's the NHL's vice president, I guess. I forget his official title.
That's good enough.
Yeah, but he says that he said, I'm aware of the reports making the rounds. Unfortunately, there is no truth to them, which, you know, what's he going to say? I can't comment on that just yet. I mean, he basically denied everything. He said that guy is not telling you the truth. So that was enough for most people to say, well, see, that guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He's just trying to break the story. But I will say for Steve Burton's behalf that he's not a guy that frequently throws things out there like other people on the internet or hockey media that are always trying to be the ones that get the scoop. So, but let's go to Tuesday when the NHL owners and the players would get together, and the owners were represented by Ron Burkle, who owns the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mark Chipman, who owns the Winnipeg Jets, Murray Edwards, who owns the Calgary Flames, Jeremy Jacobs, who owns the Boston Bruins, Larry Tannenbaum, who apparently owns the Toronto Maple Leafs. I thought they did not know they were owned by one man, and Jeff Vinnick, the Tampa Bay Lightning owner. So those are the six guys, only one member of the Western Conference represented, but those were the six going into the room, and they were going to be talking with players such as Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Toews, Shane Doan, Brad Richards, Martin St. Louis, Ryan Miller, Craig Adams, David Backes, Michael Camilleri, B.J. Crombean, Matthew Darche, Ron Hainsey, Sean Horcroft, Jamal Mayers, Manny Malhotra, Andy McDonald, George Parros, and Kevin Westgarth. And if you're wondering what those last two guys were doing in there, they are both Ivy League-educated economics majors. They are excellent, Kevin Westgarth and George Parros. They know what the hell they're doing in there. So anyway, those were the principals involved. And as I said, Bill Daly and Steve Fear were also in there. So they met on Tuesday in New York, I believe, met for an extended period of time, took a dinner break, came back, continued to meet, and that led to the press conference that Gary Bettman had on Wednesday, which was already scheduled for Wednesday because there was a Board of Governors meeting, and that's the one that you recapped of. I'm encouraged, but I have nothing to report. And I think the reason is he wasn't in the room. Certainly he's getting information. He's not oblivious like the rest of us. But him not being in the room and Donald Fear not being in the room, you remove the two main principles in this, and things started to go. And Sidney Crosby specifically said that he was happy to talk to his boss, basically, Burkle, and to talk to him face-to-face and be honest with each other. And a lot of progress seemed to be made. We haven't gotten any official word that progress has been made. But what did you think of the idea of getting the Gary Bettman and Donald Fear out of the room and this one of going with six owners and 18 players?
Well, your first impression is, are these two men responsible for the lack of progress in talks? It seems odd that the two guys in charge are willing to remove themselves from this in order to go forward, as if they were the ones who were somehow holding back progress. I assume the thinking behind it was, let's get the two biggest mouths out of the room and have some other people speak up and get some other ideas and some different dialogue going, and maybe that will jumpstart things. I don't know. It seems like that's happened, but it does seem odd to me that the best way that we can see to proceed forward and have progress is to get rid of the two guys in charge. doesn't say much about them in particular on the one hand. But on the other hand, if it was at their suggestion, then perhaps they recognize that. Again, I don't know. That's the only thing I can come up with that to me is okay, let's get these two guys out so other people can talk because we're doing too much talking. Well, otherwise, it seems like it's an indictment on their leadership.
I think that's exactly what it is. And I think that if you remember back in the last lockout, the Shanahan summit, when he corralled a bunch of former and current players, referees, former GMs, coaches, etc., to talk about ways to improve the game, it wasn't by the NHL's task. It was his initiative that got that together and led to many of the rules changes that really reinvigorated the sport coming out of the lockout. And this, I think this is like going to a trial and you have the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney, and they're the ones doing all the talking. Meanwhile, you've got the plaintiffs and the defendants and everybody else involved, and they're not really getting a chance to speak because these two people are the mouthpieces. Everything has to go through them. And if you don't, if there's any personality clash, if there's any distrust with that person, then it's going to impede progress in the negotiations. I think getting those two guys out and having a frank discussion from an owner and a player that are very familiar with each other and have had lengthy conversations over the years. I mean, when you're talking about getting specific, Martin St. Louis and Jeff Vinnick are guys that have talked for years and know each other very well, and now they can look at each other and speak honestly and frankly. I think that's going to get things going a lot quicker than just getting a report from what Donald Fehr, his interpretation of what the NHL had to say, and the owners getting a report from Gary Bettman's office of what the players had to say. I think hearing it firsthand is much more productive.
Since you brought up the example of a trial, and I think that seems to be a good example, do you think there was a vetting process on the kind of who we want included in this? Was
it, yes.
Well, do you think the players said, we don't want the owner of the Flyers.
No, I don't think it was the selection of the jury.
Just the owners themselves.
The owners get to pick. Yeah, the owners get
because
to pick
there are
who
a few there
up.
The names that you mentioned of those owners, other than Jeremy Jacobs, right, the Bruins
right.
guy. There's some other. I would expect there were some other teams and owners
right.
that would have been more representative. The Tampa Bay Lightning guy was involved in this.
The
That's
idea
surprising.
Was. To get fresh voices involved in the process. People that have not been sitting there. Jeremy Jacobs is known as one of the hardliners
right.
that really wants to just screw the players at every turn. You know, let's pay them all a nickel a year and keep the billions to ourselves. And that's basically the impression that people have of Jeremy Jacobs.
Right.
And Murray Edwards is allegedly next in line for that honor of being the biggest Scrooge in the NHL owners group. The owner of the Flames. So those two guys are the hardliners.
I did not know that.
But then
matter
you
fact,
have
I didn't even know his name.
Exactly. That's the beauty of this is nobody knew that Mark Chipman was. If he walked into a room and said, "I am Mark Chipman," you wouldn't be like, "You bastard! You're one of the people keeping us from." You'd be like, "Welcome. What can I get you here at Tim Hortons?" But anyway, I think the process of getting new people involved was part of the idea. But I think the owners got to pick which owners showed up. And the players got to pick which players showed up. I don't think it was a Red Rover game where they were saying, "All right, send over that idiot Paul Bissonnette. We've seen his tweets. He's got nothing to say. Hey, come on in here, Paul. You're going to represent the players? Sure. That sounds good to me. You're going to pay me how much?"
I'd like to be paid in women.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot of the players would go for that. But anyway, the owners might as well. I think that was part of the process, and I think the tie-in of the players was convenient in that you've got guys that are either playing right now for those owners or have in recent years. I mentioned, obviously, the Martin St. Louis and Jeff Vinnick. You've got
Sidney Crosby
and Ron Burkle, of course. Also, the less obvious ones, Ron Hainsey and Mark Chipman with the Jets. Things you might not think of right off the bat. And so you've got a different crossbreed there of people that have a prior relationship and a little bit of trust going into it. And I think this is an excellent way to do it because this is not them starting from scratch. You can't start the negotiations like this. But when we get down to where we're missing each other on a couple different topics. Let's see if we can get to a common ground. Let's give you a better example of what where we're coming from, and you give us the same. I think that's very productive. My question for you is, Sidney Crosby has been involved in the negotiations. He's been one of the main players that has been involved in the negotiations from the very beginning, and he is involved in this group that met with the owners. If this does lead to the end of the lockout, does he get any love from NHL player or fans? Because for the most part, outside of Pittsburgh, he's reviled. NHL fans seem to love to hate Sidney Crosby. They call him every name in the book. But if he is one of the instruments that leads to the end of the lockout and gets hockey back on, does he become a legend even more so of a guy that is treated like... Does this improve his standing with NHL fans, or do they just say, eh, whatever?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. Once hockey gets going again, which hopefully is sooner rather than later, and I look at what happened in the NBA last year and in the NFL a couple years ago, as soon as it's over, it's forgotten about. Really. I mean, it's that fans will move on quickly. Now, granted, there are some fans, this will have a lingering effect, I have no doubt, on this season. But my point is, once we're so focused on this now, and understandably so, but once the games start, I think the people who are willing to go forward will put this in their rearview mirror very quickly. And one of the things that I think of is the NFL referee situation was such an everyday topic if you were an NFL fan and you listened to the media. And as soon as that was gone, it was almost forgotten about. I mean, if you talk about anything in the NFL now, no one would even mention that that had happened just, you know,
right,
a few weeks ago. So,
nor does anybody even mention the fact that the current refs, the real refs, as everyone was clamoring for, make horrible mistakes every single week. And but anyway, I think a lot of the fans that say, how dare player X say something like that, he's an idiot, we'll be right back to cheering for player X or rooting against
yeah,
him. I don't think it's going
absolutely
to carry over as
just like we said.
That's
when,
that idiot that was that thought, you know, was tweeting pictures of his Rolls Royce.
You're right. Just like the you know, the Troy Brower Roman Hamrick thing. I think once they get back on the ice and
right,
that'll be forgotten and it won't be really an issue. I think for the people who are not Sidney Crosby haters like you and I think we'll probably give him a little credit at least.
Oh, I would.
But
if this leads to the end of the lockout, I give him and every and player,
think,
all 24 people involved get huge credit.
And I think media people will, you know, maybe when you look back at Sidney Crosby's career, I think it'll be a little footnote that he also played a key role in ending the lockout, blah, 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 blah. Just like the owner of your New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, was instrumental in
right,
stepping forward and being a leader and helping to resolve that the NFL situation. You know, that's a little a line in his resume. But I think people that don't like Sidney Crosby will go back to right on disliking Sidney Crosby
right,
once
which
the
is
started
a shame, because I think no matter which team you root for, if he is a part of getting that team back on the ice and allowing you to root for that team again, you should give him some love for that. I mean, I'm not saying you got to cheer for him the rest of his life, but maybe don't boo as lustily the next time he takes the ice, or take a game or two off from booing him. Give him a break, because if he and the other 18 or other 17 players can find a way to end this thing and get the game back on the ice, they've all earned a free drink on Doug Stolhand if I ever see him, because all we want is some hockey. So we talked about Tuesday and the progress that they made. On Wednesday, they were right back at it after the lengthy meetings on Tuesday. They were right back at it, the same group on Wednesday. And the NHLPA presented the NHL with a new proposal. No specifics, which I think is an excellent sign that they didn't make a press release of, here's our proposal, everybody. See, aren't we being fair? They just gave it to the NHL and said, here you go. And they awaited a response, and it did not take long. They didn't need to go think about it for 2 days and come back with something. And they gave them something that day. The NHL came back and presented a counterproposal that day, earlier today. And now we are hearing reports, as I said, I'm on Twitter right now. The NHL, here's the latest to let you know when we're recording this. The NHL owners and players have broken off meetings for right now. They have there's no indication of whether they are done for the night, but the owners have left the negotiation room. There is a podium set up for a press conference at the hotel that they are in. And I'll keep an eye on Twitter here, and we will update this as the show continues, because we got another couple hours here before we sign off the air. But I think my opinion is I do as much of reading between the lines as I can, and I'm certainly a long way away from being involved in the negotiations or getting any inside information. But if this does not lead to the end of the lockout, then we will lose the season. If this does not work, and we ultimately end these talks between the owners and the players without Bettman and without Fear, with no progress being made, and we're still far apart, and all the same usual quotes from both sides, then that's it. It's not going to get done. And I really am optimistic, not cautiously optimistic. I'm flat-out optimistic that this is going to lead to the end of the lockout by this weekend, and that we will see hockey by January 1st. That's my belief. I got to think that both sides are tired of losing money, of taking a bath, and they realize they're not that far apart to keep this thing going indefinitely. It's not worth losing a season over. It's not worth losing any more games over. Let's get this thing over with. We've done all the posturing. We've done all the BS. Let's make a deal that both sides are not happy with. That's the point of negotiations, that both sides feel like they got screwed, and get back out on the ice and play some hockey, because it's gone on way too long. It's December 5th. I mean, Christmas is 3 weeks from tomorrow, and we've got nothing. This is unacceptable, has been for a long time, and yet here we are. So I think we will see something very soon, possibly by the end of the night, possibly by tomorrow. But your thoughts on the progress so far and how things have been going?
I would not say that I'm optimistic. I would say I would have to use the cautiously optimistic term, because I want to believe more than anything. And everything you said makes sense, that, you know, both sides are losing money. Everyone's going to be a loser if we don't have a season. It makes too much sense for them not to come to a resolution. You know, the current, you know, way that they're negotiating again with Fear and Bettman out of the room and seem to be making progress. All good signs, but, you know, all these things, except for the way they're talking now, made sense a month ago, you know, that they don't want to lose any more checks and so on and so forth. So I'm happy with where they are. And certainly we've said it for a while now, but the sands are running out in the hourglass, and something has to be done soon. That, yeah, I would agree. If we take another step back, or another step back to where we were last week, then it seems very unlikely that we'll have the season. But I'm cautiously optimistic. As I said on Facebook, to quote the X-Files, I want to believe.
Right.
But I'm not ready to believe yet. But hope for the best is basically where I am right now.
Well, I find it hard to believe that they could blow this thing up at this point.
Well, I found it hard to believe the entire time, but we are with no hockey.
I could imagine. I didn't think we'd have a lockout, but I could see a situation in which we did. But I really can't see either side saying, let's just lose this entire season and we'll come back in the summer and try and work this out. That's beyond my comprehension, and I really think would be the death knell for at least one team. I don't think all 30 teams could survive not just a full season of no income, but the dramatic reduction in interest that would follow. I mean, if you're not playing any games this season and you basically go 16 months without a single game, you're off the map. I mean, it would be very difficult for teams in struggling markets to regain any fan base and traction. So I think we'll see a deal done. I'm hopeful that we see it within the next few days. And I'm hopeful that this show is completely out of date by the time we post it tomorrow morning. But we will see. We've talked about in the past the people that are really hurting from the lockout are the people that own and work at businesses in and around NHL arenas. They're the ones that are literally losing money and losing their jobs over this during this lockout. And there was a report from this week that came out that said that, to nobody's surprise, overall spending at venues near arenas in Winnipeg, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, and Calgary has decreased more than 11% from a year ago on a game day. I'm shocked it's only 11%. I would think it would be about 80%.
Well, I think it depends on where the arenas are located. If they're really downtown in the middle of things, then they could still get business. But
yeah, true.
If they're somewhere like Phoenix, you know, which is out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak,
right,
I've got to believe it's got to be much higher than 11%.
And this report came from the Canadian press,
right,
thus the slant on Canadian teams. It says restaurants are taking a nearly 11% hit, followed by fast food outlets, which are down almost 7% compared to game day last year. Drinking establishments, a.k.a. bars, are down 35%. Now, that's more in line of what I would think. I mean, people go before and after. They like to get a couple drinks, a couple of pops, go into the game. So you can see that it is, in fact, affecting those merchants as we thought they would. And this report simply quantifies how much they've lost and reminds us of who is really being affected in their day-to-day life. We all miss hockey and we wish we could see it, but they are the ones that are, like I said, being put out of work and cutting their hours, losing benefits perhaps. It's brutal for them, and hopefully the sooner this ends, the more they can get back to business and start hiring. Let's go to a different topic, if you will, and that is the... you remember a few weeks ago we talked about Evander Kane returning from the KHL, and the KHL had some harsh words for him on his way out. Basically, you suck, you can't play here, you're not good enough, get out. That was a paraphrase, not an exact quote. Well, Evander Kane has decided to speak out. He told the Winnipeg Free Press, "It didn't work out." No kidding. He says, quote, "You play 6 minutes a night and they want you to score 3 goals a game." He played 12 games for the Belarusian club Dynamo Minsk and registered 1 point while finishing a -8. He was also suspended a game for an illegal check to the head, blasted by his coach for being out of shape, and was told that he could not adapt to hockey in the KHL. Yet, he claimed there were some positives. He said it was a good experience to see what happens and how it works. And he called the Minsk fans some of the best in the KHL, I'm sure. But anyway, he said, "It wasn't the most positive experience, but it was an experience for me." I think, and the biggest thing I thought was funny was he said, "There were some long days in the hotel room." And this is what we're talking about. You're a guy born and raised in North America. You go over to Russia, and he says, quote, "You can't watch TV. I don't even think I turned on my TV the entire time I was over there. I watched movies and downloaded shows for the laptop." End quote. So at least in 2012, you have those options of getting on your phone or your iPod or iPad or something and watching anything off of Netflix. But it's a whole different life over there, and one he did not adapt well to, I think, on or off the ice. But he said it was an experience, and I think it's one that he will not repeat. I don't think he's going to go back to the KHL when his playing days are over. The Jets don't have to worry about losing him to the KHL if they are unable to sign him.
Well, I'm no fan of the KHL. I think it's a second-rate league, which is justifiably the butt of a lot of jokes. But at the same time, I don't know that anyone is really shocked by Evander Kane going over there. And at least the perception is he didn't take it too seriously, because there are some people who question whether he takes his NHL career all that seriously. You know, he's taken a lot of grief in Winnipeg. I think some of it's been a bit piling on, but some of it has been justified. And I would tend to think that this was probably you know, his fault mostly that it didn't work out over there in the KHL. And we talked about it in the past, you know, the players go over there with the attitude of, get a little extra skating in, maybe I'll see an interesting part of the world, you know. Right. Or are they going over there and trying to give this team that's paying them an honest effort and giving them their best shot? So,
well, I mean, especially since they're under contract, they know they have a job waiting for them coming back. This isn't like Mike Commodore recently signed with a team in the AHL. He's an unrestricted free agent, and he's playing for a job. He's basically auditioning for a job when the lockout ends. He's going to go into that with a whole different motivation than would Evander Kane in the KHL, who has absolutely no motivation other than pride and professionalism and maturity to go and give that team his best effort. Because whether he scores 100 points or 0 points, he's still going to make every cent that the Winnipeg Jets contract is good for. And they'll evaluate him based on what he does for the Jets, not what he did for Dynamo Minsk. Right here in California is our next story, Ed. The NHLPA, they're not just arguing with the NHL. They're also telling a California court that the lawsuit filed by the family of late NHL goon Derek Bougard should be dismissed. The family is suing the NHLPA, claiming that they failed to help them. The NHLPA failed to help the family recover what was left of Bougard's NHL salary via grievance after he died from a mixture of drugs and alcohol back in 2011. The NHLPA, though, believes that the statute of limitations for any claim against the union has expired, and in the first place said that we already told you there was no legal basis to file that grievance. You got no claim for that money. Bougard had a 4-year, $6.5 million contract with the Rangers, which he had only played 1 year of, so there were 3 years remaining on that, and a lot of money that the family did not get, and they are suing to get that money. I'm not sure why it's in California, since he signed with a New York team, and the team's offices are in New York, and the league offices are in New York, but there are the lawsuit is right here in California, and
well, I'm no lawyer. God knows, I'm no lawyer, but
no.
I would assume that there are some legal precedent, perhaps, that has taken place in California regarding some kind of a contract issue, and that's why they decided to file it here. Just a guess, but that's my guess as to why it was filed in California.
All right. I was baffled by why I saw California as the byline, but that makes as much sense as anything for a non. I did watch Law and Order last night, and
really,
yes.
What episode?
Oddly enough, it was about a hooker that got killed by a politician. Gee, that's only every other episode, is somebody in the sex business getting killed by a politician. Seems, you know, there's never a, this week on Law & Order, a 92-year-old man at a nursing home is killed by his neighbor. It's never that. It's always somebody attractive got killed by somebody that's in a position of power, and, oh, there's going to be scandal. But anyway, same show every week, but it's a good formula because America loves it. Our next story takes us to the beautiful city of Detroit, Michigan. Do you remember the Michigan slogan, Ed?
Live free or live. I have no idea. Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
I don't remember either. I think
I'm sure it was something that didn't make sense and was in Latin.
Yeah. The land of many vistas, but in Latin. Or in Spanish.
The land of 10 lakes.
But anyway. So, Mike Ilitch, there's an owner we know. He owns
pizza.
The Detroit Red Wings, and he owns Little Caesars, or at least he did. Yeah. I guess he still does. I have no idea. But, you know, the Red Wings have got one of the most famous arenas in all of hockey, the Joe Louis Arena. It was opened back in 1979, which immediately makes it the Roman Colosseum as far as sports owners are concerned.
Yeah,
this antiquated piece of crap, how can we be expected to play in this? All it has is everything we could possibly need, and it's worked perfectly well for over 30 years. So clearly it's time for the owners, or the good folks of Detroit, who we all know, that if there's a city in America that is flush with cash and looking for a reason to spend it, it's Detroit. I mean, every time I hear something out of them, it's just affluence, too many jobs, not enough workers, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Mike Ilitch proposes a $650 million development in downtown Detroit that would be anchored by a new arena for his Red Wings. It is being pitched to state lawmakers, which would be a mix of public and private partnership that includes both commercial and residential components. Let me guess what the mix is. Again, I haven't looked at the proposal, nor do I know Mr. Ilitch, but I'm going to guess public financing, private ownership, and the Ilitch group gets to keep all the money that it makes. I'm just going out on a limb there. What do you think? Maybe the other way around this time? He's going to pay for it and give all the money to the city?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure that's the case. But anyway, it would be housing, shopping, and a new hockey stadium all right there in downtown Detroit. And Mike Ilitch says in a press release, quote, "It's always been my dream to once again see a vibrant downtown Detroit," end quote. I don't know that you're going to live that long, Mr. Ilitch. That's a tall order, my friend. But we will see what happens. Again, Joe Louis Arena opened in 1979. It's the fourth oldest arena in the league. Ed, name the three arenas that are older than the Joe Louis Arena.
Edmonton, Rexall Place.
That is correct. Made the year that I was born, 1974.
The Nassau Memorial Coliseum, whatever
Nassau
it's being
County
called
Coliseum,
now. Thank
1972, you were correct. And the oldest arena in the NHL.
Let's see. The Saddle Dome.
I'm afraid that's incorrect. It's the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden from 1968.
Yeah. That's not going anywhere anytime soon. They've just made some major renovations, and that will continue to be on the list for a while.
Yeah, and it's probably, well, let's see, the Islanders are moving in 3 years, so that's going to be off the list. And Edmonton is trying like hell to get a new arena, so they're going to be off the list pretty soon, whether they move or get a new arena. So Madison Square Garden will be the oldest arena by probably 20 years in the very near future. And as you said, that ain't going to get updated. They're not going to move anytime soon. They're not going to have a brand new. Real estate is pricey enough in New York without building a new arena. I've got to go there someday. You've never been to the Madison Square Garden.
I've never been to New York.
Oh, it's a honey of a town, let me tell you. I did not care for it because I'm a nature lover, and there is no nature in New York.
Oh, what about Central Park?
Yeah, when you have to go to the one park or one of the many parks to see a tree or grass, I'm not down with the city. You can literally walk blocks and not see anything natural. It's depressing as far as I'm concerned. But I never went to I was there with my sister many years ago, about 15 years ago, and didn't get to see a hockey game, didn't get to see any sporting event, didn't get to see Yankee Stadium, any of that stuff. I would love to go back. My parents have been to a game at Yankee Stadium, sat in the Bronx Zoo, and which is the crazies out there, and they don't sell alcohol. My dad was outraged to find out, and they've got them fenced off. You can't go to the rest of the arena. But I'd love to see a game at Madison Square Garden because I've heard from people that have been there that if you have seats in the upper deck at Madison Square Garden, because the ice is not on ground level, you're going up. They described it as you feel like you're going into heaven. You're on like 8 escalators before you get off, and you're like, how high am I going, for God's sake? But what is the ice on, like the 4th floor or something like that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is an impressive arena and design. And
if you watch a game, like if the Kings are playing there, for example, you know how they have those shots of the guys getting off the bus and kind of going into the arena? Well, you see them going up this big spiral kind of, ramp, and they're going up and they're going up. It's definitely an interesting experience there.
Yep. I would love to go see a game there.
I would too. At some point. Absolutely. And, it seems like a great environment.
Yeah. Oh, so that one is going to stay in round. But if you want to see a game at the Joe, you might want to make your trips or make your plans in the next few years because I'm sure a guy that has as much influence as Mike Ilitch has, he also owns the Tigers.
Yeah,
correct?
They got a new baseball stadium not too long ago.
And the Lions got a new arena, and they've never been any good. The Lions have been an absolute joke for as long as anyone on earth has been alive. They still are, and they got themselves a brand new arena. So it's likely that Detroit will find the money somewhere to get the Red Wings a new arena. And Who knows? Maybe the Pistons, their arena must be old enough now that they would like to share that a new arena. Who knows? But we will see what happens in the near future. Some injury updates, and I just have the one because some of them are coming up with you later on in the second period. But let's start with Claude Giroux. He's the Flyers forward that was playing over in Europe when he injured his neck. And he is back on the ice skating. So if we do have an end to the NHL lockout, then Claude Giroux should be at least close to returning. He's back skating, his first time skating since he injured his neck while playing in Germany 3 weeks ago. He said, quote, "I'm doing better, but it's a process and I need to understand that. Today was my first day back in the gym, and today was just a little, or yesterday was my first day back in the gym, and today was just a little skate, some flow drills and stuff. It was good, and hopefully it keeps getting better," end quote. He skated with the Carleton Ravens, a Canadian university squad in Ottawa, for about 90 minutes. And if you're a Flyers fan, very good news that Claude Giroux is back on the ice and could be back to being healthy if and when the lockout ends.
Yeah, obviously he had the concussion last year. Anytime you hear injury in the neck or head area, you certainly have concern, especially if you a player who has had a concussion or some type of head or neck injury recently. So they said it was nothing. Of course, it was more than nothing, or he wouldn't have come back over here from Europe to get treatment, but they said...
And not skate for 3 weeks.
They said they didn't think it was serious, and it looks like it was not serious, which is obviously great news for the Flyers.
Our final story of the first period, Ed. You familiar with Marky Mark?
Mark Wahlberg? Certainly, yes.
Well, he's an Oscar-nominated actor, and apparently a hockey fan of some note. He has challenged his buddy, Ty Domi, to a friendly bout in the boxing ring. He apparently put this through during a... He's officially challenged him. "Because there's no hockey, I'm officially challenging you to a fight at the Air Canada Center. Are you in or not? Don't duck me." That's the direct quote to Ty Domi, who I'm not sure what started this, but Wahlberg was in Toronto to talk about his upcoming film Broken City and to do a youth charity event. He then gave Ty Domi the number of a downtown hotel room he was in with his entourage. He said, "We're going to have to open the double doors so that your head can fit through."
Wow.
And, he then said, "He's been ducking me, so make sure you put that in the newspapers." I'm not sure. I don't know anything about Mark Wahlberg other than he's a good actor. I enjoy his work. He was a fine rapper back in the day. Him and his Funky Bunch put out some great beats that I know Ed liked to listen to a lot. Yeah. Back on his Walkman when he would rollerblade through the streets of Fresno. Mm-hmm.
Good vibrations really got me going.
With no shirt and just a bandana on. I remember those days for you. But he doesn't want to fight him on skates. He wants it on dry land. But I'm guessing Ty Domi, even years removed, could handle Mark Wahlberg quite well. What do you think?
Well, Mark Wahlberg did do a movie recently called The Fighter. So he definitely had
that
some...
That was a movie.
I understand that, but there was no doubt there was some boxing, some actual training involved. So he's not just, you know, there's something behind this. He has some level of training. But I don't think he's a big guy from what I understand. And we're doing this podcast here on the Fox Movie Lot.
Yes.
For people who don't know. And we are amazed, and well, maybe you'll agree or disagree, I'm amazed, I should say, at the sight of most actors and how small of people they usually are. Most of the time, they're kind of smaller people. You don't, you know, you just assume they're bigger people. You see them on the big screen. I don't think Mark Wahlberg is the biggest guy in the world. Then again, Ty Domi isn't exactly 7 feet tall, but I put my money on Ty Domi. He made his living.
Let me put it this way. I know Ty Domi can take a punch. I don't know Mark Wahlberg can take a punch. I know he probably knows how to throw one. But when Ty Domi first lands anything, it's going to hurt Mark Wahlberg. Now, the two met back when Wahlberg was 18 years old and was part of the Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch touring in Toronto. That's when they met, when Domi was still with the Maple Leafs. So they've been friends ever since, and this would all be in good fun. I mean, Ty Domi, neither one is actually going to injure the other person, but it would be fun to watch, to see what an actual NHL enforcer could do against a basically average Joe. Though Wahlberg is in much better shape than your average Joe from what I've seen in the movies. And it would be interesting. It would be fun to watch. He's 41. He's not a big guy. Domi is also an older man now. And I think it would be fun to see. But I'm going to guess Ty Domi would handle himself quite well. And yeah, it would be that would be fun to watch, though, if they actually did a boxing match.
Would it?
I think it would be fun
didn't,
to watch.
Didn't they have, was, I don't know if it was pay-per-view, I don't know if how, I know you're a Howard Stern fan, but didn't they have some kind of celebrity boxing thing? Maybe it was a Fox thing. No,
oh, that was,
God,
yeah,
knowing
that was
Fox.
Television, yeah. But that was celebrities fighting celebrities. Like they had, and they'd pair people up based on their genre. So they had Screech fight Horshack. Yeah. And Horshack was like 50-something years old. The man's dead now. And Screech was at least 20 years younger than him and in much better shape and much bigger and absolutely destroyed him. It wasn't even fun to watch. Poor Horshack was literally crying in the ring. And
I'm laughing. What a heartless bastard I am.
I mean, yeah, but we also... But that was, again, that was a that was two celebrities fighting each other.
Yeah.
This would be... What I think we all want to know is, you know, we always do that with the how long you think you could last in the ring with so-and-so, you know, with Mike Tyson in his prime. And my answer was always, how long would it take him to walk across the ring and punch me and then count to 10, add 10 seconds to that because they have to count me out. That's it. I'm not fooling anybody by thinking I can run around the ring for a little bit. Have you ever seen a boxing ring in person?
I have not.
It is extremely small. It's about the size of this office we're in right now. So if you can picture that.
Really?
Yeah. You think there's a lot of room to hide from a guy like Tyson in here? Of course not. So it is. It would be a. I think it would be fun to watch, but I don't think it'll ever happen. But you know what would be ideal is like intermission of a Leafs game. If they brought him out there and put on some oversized gloves and some headgear and let him go at it, then it wouldn't be fun because then you know nobody's going to get hurt. I want to see actual fighting.
It would be a good publicity stunt, but I'll pass. I'll pass on the Wahlberg-Domi fight.
If you own a business or work for one that you'd like to help grow, you owe it to yourself to learn more about the power of promotional marketing. Market research shows that promotional marketing items, used properly, have the lowest cost per impression of any marketing media, lower than TV, radio, or internet advertising. By strategically redirecting a portion of your marketing resources, you can use the power of promotional marketing to break through the clutter and directly target your highest value sales prospects. More importantly, promotional products can help you both retain your current customers and increase your revenue per customer. Contact friend of the show, Tim O'Neill, tim@imagemasters.com, to schedule a free phone consultation to see if promotional marketing strategies have a place in your marketing mix. Your company is already spending the money on marketing. Why not tap into Tim's 25 years of experience as a marketing communications professional to see if that investment could be producing better returns? Image Masters, smarter marketing, proven results.
Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and we check in on some of the hockey that's going on in the minor league level over in Europe and also with the U.S. colleges.
I wanted to say that I had an opportunity. Like, how much hockey have you watched during this lockout? I know that it's on. They've got some games on the NHL Network. NBC Sports has broadcast some college games here and there. How much actual hockey have you watched?
I've watched two games, one college game and one Western Hockey League game. And I've recorded several other games, but haven't gotten around to watching them and then needed room on my DVR because all of the Kings playoff games are still on there. Yep. And it was delete this or something is going to get erased, so I deleted them.
Well, the reason I ask is I watched this past weekend the Chicago...
Wolves?
No, it's a USHL game, and it was I know it was like the Waterloo Blackhawks, Chicago Steel. That was it. Chicago Steel against the Waterloo Blackhawks, and
what channel was that on?
That was on via the USHL's website, the FastHockey.com, and unlike AHL Live, I was able to watch an entire game. And follow the action and actually reacted when a goal was scored because I could see the play develop. So if anyone's looking to get some hockey fix of juniors. The USHL has a – their service is called fasthockey.com. And the – now, don't think for a second that it's NHL quality. You're not getting, you know, in-your-face great action, but it is watchable, good action. And I love the – it's basically a clean feed, where you get to hear the radio play-by-play, who did a great job. That guy, the Waterloo announcer, was very good. But they introduced, they had just the arena sound during the beginning, and I swore that the name of the mascot was Tony Hawk. Huh. And I thought, oh, that's genius. And he's from Party Town, USA, according to the announcer. But it was Tommy Hawk, which was even better. And Tommy Hawk and... I enjoyed watching the broadcast. Let me put it that way. I was able to watch the entire game. It's also, their network is available. There's a fasthockey.com channel on the Roku for those of you that have that. So you can actually watch it on your TV, which is what I did. You don't have to sit in front of your computer. And if you're really jonesing for hockey like I am, that's an option. And it's it was good games and some, you know, they got hundreds of NHL players and guys in college that are from the USHL. So... good quality of players, better broadcast than AHL Live, and it's at least something to get your hockey fix. So there you go.
All right. The World Junior Hockey Championships are coming up. For some of you, that's a bigger deal than others. If we don't have a resolution with the NHL lockout as soon as we hope, we may all be scrambling to tune into this because it is – a very high level of hockey with the future of the NHL on display. Now, the World Junior Championships are coming up on starting on December the 26th. They will run through January the 5th. This year's championships will be held in Russia. The name of the town is Ufa.
Could you spell that?
U-F-A.
Unrestricted free agent?
Yes, it is. Going to be held in unrestricted free agent Russia. Quick check of, you know, the teams are starting to be organized. Roster invites are being handed out. Team Sweden, as you well know, Doug, being of Swedish heritage.
Yes, is your got my Dala horse right here.
Yes, you do. Is your World Junior Championship defending champions.
You're damn right.
Leading the way for this year's squad as they look to defend their title, yes?
No, I'm just saying Sweden, it really is where hockey lives.
Right, right. Leading the way this year for their squad are a couple of highly coveted prospects. One of
Philippe
them is
Forsberg.
Hampus Lindholm, yes, of your Anaheim Ducks.
My Norfolk Admirals.
Sixth overall pick in this last year's draft. And Philippe Forsberg of the Washington Capitals, taken 11th overall,
yep,
in the draft. However, Sweden will be without some key players. Oscar Klefbom, who we talked about on last week's show, is out of the Edmonton Oilers defenseman. Prospect, and Minnesota Wild defensive prospect Jonas Brodin. They're both injured. Mika Zibanejad, also a draft pick, high draft pick for the Ottawa Senators, who had the game-winning overtime goal in last year's gold medal game, will not be participating because Ottawa GM Brian Murray has forbidden it. He is not going to allow Zibanejad to join Team Sweden because he wants him to continue to play in the AHL with Binghamton. That has not sit well with Sweden head coach Roger Rönnberg, who said, quote, "It is sad that Europeans always have to be on our backs for them over there and that they can dictate and decide about these tournaments. They, North Americans, are pretty stubborn. It's a game of power against Europe," end quote. So Sweden not happy and perhaps claiming some kind of sabotage that the Canadian general manager is not the general manager of the junior team in Canada, but that a Canadian GM is keeping one of their star players
from
possibly facing Canada in the World Junior Championship.
Are any of the Canadian players being kept from playing? No.
Not that I know of.
No. They would drive them to the game and make sure that they can play. So I'm not saying it's collusion, but I'm saying he's got a legitimate beef. European players are told they cannot play. Canadian players are not.
Well, speaking
Sweden
of,
will still... I heard, though, that yes, they are going to... they have a new goalie prospect that they're going to be playing. He looks much older, and his name sounds like Henrik Lundqvist, but he is actually 17, and he will be playing in this. So that's my understanding.
Frenrik. Lundqvist, yes. I believe is his name.
Fredrik Lundqvist will be playing in this, absolutely. And these two twins that are just the Soldin twins.
I've never heard of them.
No, they're funny-looking dudes, but they can play.
Speaking of Team Canada.
If you can play, you can play.
Yeah, speaking of Team Canada, they've got some familiar names as far as some draft picks on their roster. We've got Mark Scheifele of the Jets, Jonathan Huberdeau of the Panthers, Ryan Strome of the Islanders, defenseman Dougie Hamilton of the Bruins, as well as forward Nathan MacKinnon, possibly the number one overall pick in this coming NHL draft. And they've also got goaltending prospect Malcolm Subban battling for the starting job in between the pipes. So those are some of the Canadian players scheduled to be on the ice. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was also scheduled to be a part of the team, but we'll have an update on him coming up in just a bit.
I can't wait.
Russia won the silver medal in last year's World Junior Tournament. Their roster will include, of course, number one overall pick of the Edmonton Oilers, Nail Yakupov, Mikhail Gregorenko, the 12th overall pick. He was with the Buffalo Sabres. And Andrei Vasilevsky, the 19th overall pick for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Also invited was Valery Nuchikin.
New chicken.
New, I'm sorry. New Hishkin.
New chicken better.
New Hishkin, number one Russian prospect for the 2013 draft, according to Central Scouting. And, of course, Russia will be on their home ice of unrestricted free agent Russia.
Yeah.
So perhaps a boost for them.
In the past, it was held at restricted free agent Russia, yes. But it's now graduated.
And finally, we'll give you a quick little note on the U.S.
I was going to say, where's the Team USA? I know John Gibson, the goalie, is going to be in there.
Yeah, they're looking to improve on last year's showing in the World Junior Championships, where they finished... Where was it? I think they finished sixth.
Yeah, they didn't finish at all.
Right. But they're hoping, obviously, this year will be different. Alex Galchenyuk is one of their star players for him. He was the third overall pick in this year's draft from Montreal. Now, obviously,
sounds Russian.
Of Russian heritage, right. But was born in North America.
Garcia would be another.
Yes.
Are you eligible?
I am. Seth Jones, who we've talked about a lot.
His movies.
The son of Popeye Jones is one of the.
Seth Rogen.
Oh, right. I confused Seth Jones with Seth Rogen.
Yes.
Seth Jones, possibly the number one pick in this coming draft. Certainly one of the top defensive prospects. U.S. just going to have three players from last year's squad on this year's squad. Again, they were seventh, as I look at my notes here, in the World Junior Championships. That was not good, to say the least. So there we go. The World Junior Championships coming up, and there'll be some good talent on display. Let's check in on the European leagues and check in on players who are coming and going, injuries and all that kind of good stuff. Let's start with TJ Gagliardi. You know, Doug, you had mentioned that, while the season's going on, you easily remember what teams these guys are playing on. What team does TJ Gagliardi play for?
He plays for Team Edward.
Excuse me?
In the Twilight saga. He's not a...
No. We're looking for an NHL team.
Oh,
that
NHL
he currently
team.
Plays
TJ
for.
Gagliardi. I'm going to get...
I can see by your face you don't know.
I'll say the Tampa Bay Lightning.
The San Jose Sharks,
of
actually.
Of course. Yeah. Has he actually played a game for them?
He did. He did play a few games for them last year.
I don't recall that. He was very memorable.
Did
you know that without looking it up?
No.
Yeah.
I remember him on the Colorado Avalanche.
If he walked into this room right now, would you recognize him?
I would hug him and say, TJ, how have you been? No,
if he wasn't wearing the uniform.
No, but he is, looking to be a member of the San Jose Sharks. But he did play over in Germany for Bittenheim-Bissinger SC of the German second tier league. But
I hate them.
He is now back home in North America, suffered a minor knee injury, decided to return home. But he was skating this week with the Calgary Hitmen, not playing for them, mind you, just skating with them. So apparently that was, in fact, a minor knee injury if he's already back and skating. But he's decided to maybe he felt like, I dodged the bullet over there. I'm going to go ahead and come home and not play and put myself in jeopardy. Logan Couture, I'm sure you know him of the San Jose Sharks, has also decided to leave Europe after 22 games playing in Switzerland. He has come home for, quote unquote, family reasons. He had been playing well overseas over in Switzerland. He had recorded 23 points in 22 games in Switzerland. But he's back now in North America. After about 2 months of playing for Djurgården in Sweden. Gabriel Landeskog has also decided to come back to North America. Adrian Dater of the Denver Post reported that it's for tax-related reasons. It is probable, according to Adrian Dater, that the 2012 Calder Trophy winner would have been forced to pay a significant income tax had he played over in Sweden much longer. So he's decided he doesn't want to do that and has come back to North America.
But remember,
as well,
folks, it's all about the love of the game, not the money for the NHL players. I have to pay how much? I'm leaving.
Yeah. As far as some players that are joining up over in Russia, we had some guys coming back. Jason Pominville, the mayor of Pominville and the captain of your Buffalo Sabres.
What's the population of Pominville?
It's growing every day.
Right now it's zero.
Yeah. He is set to sign with Mannheim of the German League. Columbus Blue Jackets forward Mark Letestu has signed a deal in the Swedish second division with Omtuna. Letestu had been an assistant coach for Bonneville of the Alberta Junior Hockey League.
Apparently, they the Flats?
Apparently that wasn't getting it done. So, yeah, I don't think it's Bonneville. I think it's Bonneville. A little bit
different. If it was Bonneville, then they should be called the Flats.
Panthers forward Sean Mathias agrees to a lockout deal with EHC Black Wings Linz of the Austrian League. Switzerland's National A League is continuing to stockpile NHL talent.
Of course they are.
They have just signed Dallas Stars forward Louis Eriksson to
he
a lockout
the,
deal.
Let me see if I can get this right. He joined the team that already has Rick Nash and Joe Thornton.
That is correct.
Did you see the goal
Davos.
Did you see the goal that Rick Nash had?
Saw the link, didn't click on it.
Basically, it was a power play for HC Davos, and Joe Thornton, as he is known to do, was running the show, quarterbacking the power play, made a cross-ice pass to one player who then immediately made another cross-ice pass to Rick Nash, who was right at the doorstep and one-timed it in to past a goalie that was just flummoxed, and it made me realize, one, how good these guys are at that level, and two, how much I miss the sport.
Well, apparently, Rick Nash and Joe Thornton, not enough to give Davos a great season so far. They currently sit in eighth place in a 12-team league, 13 points out of the top spot, according to the article.
That's really shocking, don't you think?
Maybe they've got some poor goaltending. I don't know.
Or maybe they're just, like we've talked about in the past, if you're a really good adult league player, you kind of take it easy. If you're playing at the lower level, you can turn it on at any time, but why do it? From the looks of things, though, those guys are world-class talent. They should be able to lead that team into the tops of their standings, I would think.
Much like, who is it that went and played in Singapore? I forgot already.
Johnny Oduya,
yeah.
Like take a group of adults there in, I think it was Thailand, and all of a sudden you're winning the entire league, winning the tournament. What do you know? We got our new guy here. He's a cousin, and let's see how we do.
A few more players that have joined up to play over in Europe. Boston Bruins forward Danny Pae joining Elvis of Finland's SM Liiga. Dallas Stars forward Erik Nyström has joined the Stavanger Oilers of the Norwegian Hockey League. The news came shortly after it was reported that Nyström also has agreed to coach Team USA in the 2013 World Maccabiah Games, which I believe is the Jewish Olympics,
what?
Basically.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
There's a Jewish Olympics.
Yeah, I believe I've pronounced that correctly, the Maccabiah Games. Now, we have our listener, Aliza, in Jerusalem. We haven't heard from her in a while. I hope she's doing well. Perhaps she can give us a clarification on that. I believe it's basically the Jewish Olympics. I believe that's the action. You look at the look on Doug's face is of shock right now.
Well, I just don't understand the concept. I mean,
it's basically
Israel is allowed to participate in the Olympics.
They are, but they have their own games. That's just for Jews. Apparently,
are you sure you got that right?
I why would I make that up?
I don't. It seems like something out of The Onion. I can't believe there would be this is Olympics. The Jewish Olympics are underway.
Well, it's not technically called that. It's just a sporting event that is just.
All right, and they have a winter games, apparently, because
they
this
must.
Guy's going to be coaching.
They must, yes. That will certainly be brought up again on next week's show, I have no doubt.
Yes. Some clarification on the alleged Jewish Olympics and the Winter Games.
The Maccabiah Games. Maccabiah, if you would.
Give me that one more time, and I will look it up.
Go ahead. Maccabiah Games. Let's see. Tampa Bay Lightning forward Dana Terrell has agreed to a lockout deal with Slovak Extraliga club Banská Bystrica. He missed the final 35 games of last season with a knee injury, and so he is looking to get some work. Pittsburgh Penguins forward Tanner Glass signed with NC Banská Bystrica as well. So Dana Terrell and Tanner Glass.
You know, you've got a great voice. You do a lot of voiceover work for NHL.
I do.
Don't ever get a job in Europe outside of North America.
Not planning on it.
Hey,
I'm
ladies
not
and gentlemen,
heading overseas.
Now taking the ice. Your
NC Banská Bystrica. Solar Bears. I don't know what their mascot is. Finally, Philadelphia
champions of the Jewish Olympics. You are correct, by the way. That is essentially what it is. It is a international Jewish athletic event held in Israel every 4 years under the auspices of some federation, and it is open to all Jewish athletes as well as Israeli athletes, regardless of religion.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I think the reason I remember that is there were a couple of guys who were Major League Baseball players who were going over to play.
Like Sean Green?
Yeah, something like. But my question is, I could see, and again, hockey would fall into this as well, I could see having an individual competition for who's the best Jewish javelin thrower, but how do you have a team event? I mean, East versus West, you know, North versus South.
I think
teams?
It's just teams split up. I don't think it's regional. I think it's just
teams. Well, actually, it said Nystrom was coaching Team USA, so it's obviously for Jews all over the world. They convene on Israel for this. Eh? There you go. Interesting. Anyway, as I was saying,
the opening ceremonies must be would be something.
That
would be something they should show when they do like the telethons and stuff, you know?
What?
The Jewish Olympics.
For a telethon?
No, they have like telethons to raise money for Jewish charities over here in the United States. They have a telethon every year, and that would be something to show.
Okay.
I'd rather watch some sporting events than
maybe the NBC Sports Network can get on board with that. They already have the Olympics. Why not the Maccabiah Games as well? Finally, Philadelphia Flyers tough guy Tom Sestito has parted ways with the Sheffield Steelers of the Elite Ice Hockey League in the UK. He had 19 points in 17 games while picking up 69 penalty minutes.
His request to be paid in women was not met.
reportedly looking to join another European league, possibly the Czech Extraliga. So I don't know if that's for tax purposes or not.
Not just the Czech Liga, the Extraliga.
Extraliga. Let's move back over here to North America and check in on the Western Hockey League, where the Seattle Thunderbirds announced that center Tyler Allos has retired from hockey. He had suffered multiple concussions over the past two seasons and was not cleared to return by team doctors. General manager Russ Farwell said, quote, "Tyler is a valuable member of our team. He will be missed. He's been advised by doctors against returning to the ice this season. We know this was a difficult decision but it is made in the best long-term interest for him, and we fully support him." And quote, "Allos will remain with the Thunderbirds for the balance of the season to assist the coaching staff. He'll also start utilizing the WHL scholarship at a school to be determined. He played 201 career games, 4 years for the Thunderbirds, had 56 points on 19 goals and 37 assists. AHL News told you last week that New Jersey Devils star Adam Henrique suffered a thumb injury while playing for the Albany Devils and was going to be out of action 4 to 6 weeks. However, Tom Galitti of the Bergen Record, Bergen County Record, reports Henrique has suffered the same injury as Devils center Jakob Josefsson 2 years ago, and Josefsson ended up missing 2.5 months and 30 games after he had surgery to repair a detached ligament in his right thumb. So Galitti speculating that maybe the injury to Adam Henrique could be even more significant than realized. We talked about Ryan Nugent Hopkins earlier being a part of the Canada World Junior roster. Well,
indeed,
that may not happen.
Oh.
He has suffered a shoulder injury and will miss he's going to spend about a week strengthening the shoulder back in Edmonton. He's left the Oklahoma City Barons. Not clear exactly the extent of the shoulder. The number one overall pick in 2011, again, is having the team doctors examine him, and they'll then kind of see how it responds to some treatment and then go forward. But his status for the World Junior Championships is up in the air at this point. Winnipeg Jets forward Alexander Burmistrov, or Burmistrov, heard it both ways, suffered a shoulder injury, another shoulder injury, while playing for St. John's in the AHL. He has been summoned to Winnipeg to have the shoulder looked at by, again, the Jets team doctors. And also, want to mention that Michael Russo of the Star Tribune in Minneapolis reporting that the Wild's top prospect, Mikael Granlund. We've been told that we've been saying it wrong the entire time. It's not Michael. It's
Mikael
Granlund. So we're getting closer. Yeah. But anyway, he was playing for the Houston Aeros. He missed 12 games with an ankle injury, and he is now apparently set to return to action for the Houston Aeros. So Mikael Granlund ready to get back after the ankle injury. And we've got a picture here of him. And it looks like he has never met a comb before, as he was actually taking a picture, and that's how he decided he wanted his hair to look.
He was in public, and he said basically looks like he just licked a light socket.
He looks wide awake. He's got a great smile, but it appears he just got out. He's got some bedhead going on there or something. But,
well, like you said, that is intentional.
Those crazy kids these days, that's how they like to wear their hair.
I think you ought to do your hair that way, Ed.
I do. When I wake up in the morning and I look in the mirror, it looks like that.
In the 20 years I've known you, essentially, I've never known you to have even remotely a different hairdo. Have you ever had a different hairstyle?
Before I met you, I had a mohawk. Yeah.
Come on now. I demand pictures. I've seen the pictures of you as a child. You had a little bit of longer hair.
What about the Luke Skywalker hairdo I had when I was a youth?
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That legit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Which Luke Skywalker? Star Wars, Empire?
Star Wars. Okay. Yeah. That kind of helmet hair kind of a thing?
Yeah, that going on. That's right. I've seen the picture.
The haunting charcoal portrait that was commissioned at Magic Mountain, I believe. Yes. Love seeing that on the wall when I go home all the time.
That's right.
You know, when
did you folks meet the great Magoo? Oh, that's Eddie. That's Chip.
That's Kazoo, I believe, not Magoo. But
yeah, Magoo is the blind man.
Yes,
that's right.
More AHL news. We must press on. New Jersey Devils forward Steven Gionta has signed a deal with the Albany Devils.
Albany River Rats.
No, it's they've changed the name.
That's right.
It's the
right.
Albany Devils now. Gionta, no stranger to Albany. He is the team's all-time leader in every significant statistical category: points, goals, assists, shots, and games played. So they welcome back Steven Gionta in Albany. Dallas Stars forward
Of a backhanded compliment, isn't it? When you're like the all-time leader of the AHL.
It's kind
of
like, remember in the...
You
did not like
a
the
record.
Movie Bull Durham, so I don't know if you watched it to its entirety, but...
I did.
At the end, Crash Davis is about to set the home run mark for a minor league baseball player and did not want anyone to know about it because he said it was a dubious honor. And,
right.
That's
it's
what
like
you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're the best player of all the players that aren't good enough to make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, better than being some guy who only played a half a season and couldn't cut it.
No, absolutely. At least he's had a successful career, and good for him. But, yeah, it's kind of it's not one you're going to really tout. You know, Albany, I'm kind of a big deal around here. I'm the mayor
of Albany, yeah.
I got the key to the city.
I got to imagine one of these days they'll be retiring the number of Steven Gionta there in Albany.
Yeah, again, more power. I mean, look, I guess it's who am I to say that's something not to be proud of? I'd be tickled pink if I could play hockey beyond a level of beginner league.
If my high school wanted to retire my old football jersey, believe me, I'd be thrilled about it.
You'd show up and
I would
you'd
be
sport
there.
The Mohawk?
I would be there. Dallas Stars forward Derek Roy, close to being fully recovered from a shoulder injury, shoulder surgery, actually. He's going to start practicing with the Texas Stars in the AHL next week. Of course, Roy has not played yet for the Dallas Stars, being traded from Buffalo in July, And hopefully his Ferrari is working well, and we can get another tweet of his picture
off
of his car.
Ha, ha, ha.
Months after undergoing hip surgery in mid-July, Flyers defenseman Andreas Lilja, who's still somehow drawing a check in professional hockey, is going to have a conditioning stint in the AHL with the Adirondack Phantoms. Of course, he can't play any games with them, but he can have a conditioning stint with them, and he's going to do that. And finally, final note from the AHL anyway, Andrew Shaw, the Chicago Blackhawks, recently played in his fourth game in the AHL for the Rockford Ice Hogs, or as I like to call them, Los Ice Hogs. He was called for a boarding penalty and subsequently suspended for one game. He had just come off a six-game suspension for an illegal hit, and of course he also had a three-game suspension in the NHL last season, so... Andrew Shaw racking up the suspensions in a short amount of time.
You know, it strikes me as a... it would be... Knowing what I know of the AHL's broadcast quality from AHL Live, I'd love to see the AHL's version of Brendan Shanahan giving the, "Hi, I'm Doug Stohan, Vice President of Enforcement here in the AHL." Meanwhile, the video is, you know, showing half my face. It looks like the picture from the end of 16 Candles with Anthony Michael Hall. Yesterday, let's take a look at the video. Well, you can't really see it, but just off the camera here, this guy hit somebody, and I'm told it was pretty bad. Here's somebody's cell phone camera of they were, you know, taking a bit of the hot dog vendor and the mascot. But in the background there, you can see. But yeah, the AHL obviously coming down hard on Andrew Shaw. He's not welcome.
Let's switch over to the East Coast Hockey League, the ECHL, and tell you about somebody who's joined to play. With the Utah Grizzlies of the ECHL, and that's Colby Armstrong of the Toronto Maple Leafs, signing a deal with Utah. And let's see. He's not a lot of the NHLers are going to the ECHL, but a few. We talk about Brandon Dubinsky and Joey Crabb, Scott Gomez, all playing for Alaska.
Yep. Kyle Clifford and Devin Setoguchi with the Ontario Reign. Yep. And now
Colby
Armstrong.
Is
I wonder what the tie
Utah Grizzly.
Like, I get the guys going to Alaska. They're from there.
Well, Brandon Dubinsky, I don't believe, is from Alaska. So I don't know what his.
No?
I don't believe. I don't think. I think Scott Gomez is the only guy from there. But
let me look that up. But I get the guys that live out here and want to play in Ontario. But I don't get the people that. Yeah, he's born in Anchorage, Brandon Dubinsky.
I stand corrected.
But I don't get the Utah connection for Colby Armstrong. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. And I don't know what Ryan O'Byrne's connection is with Florida. Yet the Colorado Avalanche player is inked to deal with the Florida Everblades of the ECHL. He had been coaching in the BCHL with the Victoria Grizzlies, which is a two-tier Canadian junior club, so the story says. One more note from the ECHL. On Monday, December the 17th, how many days away from that is it?
That's a week and a half.
All right. To get ready, people in the Bay Area of Northern California, the San Jose Sharks will be hosting an ECHL game at HB Pavilion, also known as the Shark Tank, of course, the home of the San Jose Sharks. The San Francisco Bulls, which is the Sharks' ECHL affiliate, will be taking on the Stockton Thunder with complimentary access granted to all Sharks season ticket holders. Before and after the game, all attendees are strongly encouraged to patronize one of the downtown San Jose businesses to support them during the NHL lockout. In addition, the Sharks Foundation will be hosting a Toys for Tots toy drive. Guests can bring a new unwrapped toy or make a monetary donation. All donors will receive a raffle ticket for a prize drawing that will be held that night as well. Sharks Executive Vice President of Business Operations Malcolm Brodelone said, quote, "We all miss having the game of hockey at HP Pavilion. This free event is a way for us to say thank you to our loyal and patient fans while also trying to assist those who have been directly impacted by the labor dispute between the NHL and the Players Association." So, again, if you're in the Bay Area and want to go check out a game at HP Pavilion December 17th, it is the San Francisco Bulls against the Stockton Thunder. And if you're a season ticket holder for the Sharks, you get in free. How much it will be if you're not, I don't know. But
$100. No, they got to make up that money somehow, folks. No, good for them. And it should be the Bulls have gotten on this show and gotten a lot of publicity. They're doing a good job of getting themselves out there, getting that brand out there, and taking advantage of the location they have and the lull in NHL hockey for the Bay Area. So good for them.
Our final minor league note comes from the CHL, not the Canadian Hockey League, Doug, but the Central Hockey League.
Yes.
Where Detroit Red Wings defenseman Kyle Quincy has signed a deal with the Denver Cutthroats.
Okay.
There
is
you
that
go.
The only news? Oh, that, I thought there was more.
That's it.
Well, let me update you on the negotiations in the NHL and NHLPA. According to the world of Twitter, the owners and players took a break. They are back at it. It is past 11 o'clock Eastern time, and they are just going back into the room. The podium is still set up. No media has gathered, the media has gathered around the podium, is waiting something, but the fact that they're going to continue talking approximately past midnight is a good sign, in my opinion. And no leaks from either side. Neither side wants to say anything, so that's also a very good sign. That's the latest.
All right. The latest update from Doug Stolhand at the news desk.
Yes.
We'll wrap up the second period with our college hockey notes. We have a new number one team in the country this week, Doug.
Alaska Fairbanks.
I'm afraid not.
What?
The Wildcats of New Hampshire. They received 31 of 50 first place votes to take over the top spot from Boston College, who dropped down to number two. Wildcats are 11-1-2 on the season. As for BC, the defending national champs, they had their 10-game winning streak snapped, dropped in one spot, but they still received 19 first-place votes. The top five are rounded out by Miami of Ohio, Minnesota, and Notre Dame. Speaking of Boston College, despite losing that top spot, their head coach Jerry York is on the cusp of history. York is, after this past week, currently tied with Michigan State coach Ron Mason, who's no longer coaching, for the most wins in Division I hockey history with 924. He can break the all-time win mark with a win over Providence on Friday. In his career, he's coached at Clarkson, Bowling Green, and Boston College. He has won 5 national championships, 4 with BC, 1 with Bowling Green. So clearly one of the great all-time coaches in collegiate hockey, and he will definitely break that record sometime this season, but we'll see if he does it this week or not.
Very good. And it seems like, I don't know how old he is, but he maybe have a chance at that 1,000 mark and really put that record out of reach and give people something to really shoot for. That's a lot of wins when you think about it.
Indeed.
Good for him. One last update on the negotiations. They are saying that the talk now...
Who are they, Doug?
They, being the media that is reporting this and is gathered in New York, are reporting that the word is that the NHL season, if they are able to come to a deal soon, within the next day or two, would begin on Christmas Day.
Wow.
What do you think about that,
Symbolic,
Ed?
Perhaps?
Well,
do they usually play on Christmas Day?
They don't. They have ceded that to the NBA.
Right.
And I think that's a wise move. People are spending it with their family. The NBA gets a huge rating for the games because they always put really good games on that day. Usually like Lakers Celtics or Lakers Heat, something like that. But that's the word. I still think the best idea would be to start on January 1st. And, start the new year fresh, clean slate, and go from there. But that's the latest word from the news desk.
Well, speaking of January 1st, of course, that's usually the date of the Winter Classic, although it wouldn't have been this year. But you know what I'm saying. They had, at the 2010 Winter Classic at Fenway Park in Boston, they had an event called Frozen Fenway, where they had the college hockey games there as well. Well, the Winter Classic isn't probably going to be back in Boston anytime soon, but it looks like Frozen Fenway is something that they want to try and get going at least semi-annually. The Boston Red Sox are planning a third edition of the event in 2014. Red Sox executive Sam Kennedy said, quote, "We are deep into the planning phase for the possibility of the return of Frozen Fenway in 2014. We'll need to secure proper city approvals and complete our negotiations with many teams who are interested in competing before we have any formal announcement." But again, looks like they'll have some outdoor hockey at Fenway Park in the near future involving some college hockey teams. So there you have it. There's your second period update on minor league hockey, college hockey, and hockey over in Europe.
For high-quality, professional-style hockey jerseys, your best choice is Tally Hockey Jerseys. At Tally Hockey Jerseys, we only use the highest quality twill letters and numbers when customizing jerseys for teams. We take special pride in creating cool and unique crests for teams from all over the world. Tally Hockey Jerseys offers 14 jersey designs that combine classic design details with today's performance fabrics. All Tally Hockey Jerseys have throwback design details, just like the best and most expensive throwback jerseys, minus the high price. All 14 styles of Tally Hockey jerseys are only $49 per jersey. That includes a jersey with your team's custom crest, as well as your name and number in double layer or single layer twill, depending on your jersey style. If you're interested in ordering 12 or more jerseys for your team but don't have a team crest design, no problem. Tally Hockey jerseys will design one for you for free. If you need jerseys for a team and want a cool crest but don't want to order 12 jerseys, ask about our stock crest. For more information or to place an order, contact Dave at tallyhockeyjerseys.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page to see hundreds of pictures of custom crests we've created for other teams. That's Tally Hockey Jerseys, T-A-L-L-Y, Hockey Jerseys.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and let's wrap it up before Doug passes out, as he's not looking good here as we
Ed, wrap I got up the I show. Forgot to mention at the top of the show, I had a bit of a celebrity sighting for me. Are you easily starstruck?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not that there... I don't look at somebody and say, oh, that's so-and-so, that's cool. But I don't, starstruck is like, oh, wow, you know.
Right. No. Who would be somebody that you would say, if you're walking down the street in public street, and you see somebody, who would you say, I got to go get a picture with that person? Give me a name.
Well, I'm just going to, the only person that I got kind of star struck at working here was Terry Bradshaw, because I'm a huge Steelers fan. And as a little kid, he was the guy, Hall of Famer. And, you know, now he's a crazy guy on TV. He came around the corner one time and I was coming around the other corner and we almost bumped into each other, and he's like, oh, hey, excuse me, how's it going? And I was like, hey, you know, I was like, whoa, Terry Bradshaw.
You were kind of like the Mean Joe Green and the kid in that coat commercial.
Thanks, Terry, as he throws me his sport coat. So that was, I mean, I don't
throws
know.
Throws you his keys to park his car.
I'm sure there are plenty of other big-time people. If I saw him walking down the street, I would be
well,
like, whoa.
The reason I say is this past Friday, I went to see my favorite comedian, Doug Stanhope. And saw him at the Comedy Store on Sunset Strip, and we got there very early. And we were walking around, and I saw him out smoking a cigarette on the street. Thankfully, you're not allowed to smoke indoors, so he had to go out in public. And I wasn't starstruck by any of this, but it was very cool. I was very happy to see him, met him, and talked to him briefly, got a picture with him. And that was just, it was one of those where I'm like, you know, I'm jaded living in where I do. And like you said, working on a movie lot, I can literally walk around and see How I Met Your Mother. They film all kinds of movies here. They were filming some scene that I had to walk through the other day just to get to my office, that they were filming something in the quad. So we've seen plenty of celebrities. I've seen Steven Spielberg when I walk around, blah, blah, blah. And all the different athletes that we've been fortunate enough to meet in our, but seeing him, I felt like a fan, and it's not often that I feel that way, that I still feel like just a guy that is seeing somebody I admire and appreciate and have a chance to interact with him as a fan, not as a member of the media. And here we can't really do anything. Like, you couldn't go tell Terry Bradshaw, man, I remember you, I watched you as a kid. It's inappropriate here because we're working. But if you see him on the street, you could go do that. So it was cool. I was just wondering if you had any experience in that. But I didn't realize that Terry Bradshaw left you.
Yeah. You know, my sister-in-law was telling me this week she went to a No Doubt concert here in town. And they had really good seats. And the seat next to her was vacant. The show starts. The lights come down. They start performing. And all of a sudden, this guy comes scurrying in and sits next to her. Dave Grohl. Lead singer of the Foo Fighters, who is like her favorite band. So she was talking about how she eventually talked to him a little bit. And so I ask you, what do you do when you, are you just, because she was telling me, you know, the way she approached him just to have a little conversation with him was she's like, hey, I don't want to bother you, but, you know, you're here,
but
and I have to say,
you
know, I'm a big fan. I went to your concert here last year and you guys put on a great show. And I just wanted to say that. And he was very, you know, oh, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Is that kind of the approach you take with him?
Absolutely. I'm not going to make a big deal out of this. Just wanted to say I'm a big fan. It's very nice to meet you. And thanks for all the great music, something like that. I mean, as you know, I once proposed marriage to Tyra Banks on the spot.
I wasn't there, but I believe that you did do that, because you would do something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a... I'm not intimidated to go up and talk to people. That's one thing. The only person that's ever intimidated me that I could not talk to was Scotty Bowman. I didn't feel like I had anything to say that would possibly interest Scotty Bowman. And so I'm like, I'm not even going to bother introducing myself. But anybody else, I'm a very, they're human beings. And I've met enough of them that I know they're just like everybody else. And they don't mind if you come up and say hello. And very rarely are they jerks. I certainly, if I see them out in public, though, having dinner with their family, I'm not going to go bother them. But if it's something like that where I'm sitting or I'm on an elevator, like when Arsenio Hall, I was on an elevator with Arsenio Hall here at work one time. And I said, I just got to let you know, your scene in Amazon Women on the Moon was the funniest thing I've ever seen on film. And he was very appreciative, and he told me some stories about how they were making the movie. And it was a very cool experience to talk to. And so that's the kind of thing I would do, you know, just show them that you appreciate their work, that you're not some blowhard. Don't make a big deal and scream like a fan and demand pictures or autographs or anything like that. Or, hey, can you, I'm going to call my wife. Can you say hello to her real quick? Can you leave my outgoing message? My name's, you know, Scooter, by the way. Just say, hey, you reached Scooter. No, none of that. Just big fan. It's an honor to meet you. Keep up the good work. Leave it at that. Because that's how I believe if I was ever a celebrity and I was walking the streets and somebody came up to me, that's how I would want them to treat
you
me.
You are a celebrity, Doug.
I'm not a celebrity. But let's move on to the correspondence.
Well, I want to say something. Let's just go ahead and do it now. A power play, I guess, if you will. We usually do our power plays before we get into the correspondence and stuff. And I wanted to recognize the passing of David Courtney this past week. For people who do not know, he was the longtime public address announcer of the LA Kings. He was also the PA announcer for the Angels for many, many years, and most recently for the LA Clippers for the past few years. And if you don't know what a PA announcer is, he's the guy in the arena that makes all the announcements, introduces the team onto the ice, does all the little, you know, funny things in between periods and whatnot. So anyway.
Basically the voice of the team inside the arena.
Yeah, he did it for three professional teams in Southern California, so a lot of fans obviously knew who he was.
Right.
I got a chance to know him fairly well this past season. Long story short, and it's funny with the social media and kind of how we quote-unquote know people that we've never met because of this show. But anyway, he and my wife connected on Facebook. He lived very near us when we were living in Orange County. She's a huge Angels fan. Obviously, he also worked in radio. I work in radio. So anyway, there was a kind of a connection there. And so when the season started, I went up and introduced myself to him. And we had a conversation. And from there on, basically every home game, we would at least say hello to each other. How are you doing? That kind of thing. Sometimes we'd have some longer conversations. But I got to know him pretty well. He would give my wife and I tickets to the games when I wanted to go just as a fan and take my wife. We met up with him and his wife at the Kings victory parade, and they had been, my wife and he and his wife had been talking for a long time about getting together and, getting together as a couple, at foursome and going out to dinner. And, we were finally going to do it not this Saturday, but a week from this Saturday. We were going to meet up before the San Diego Chargers game. And, unfortunately that won't happen. As he died unexpectedly from a heart condition. I believe it was 54 years old, so obviously still very young, and just a super nice guy. After one of the Kings games that he gave tickets to me and my wife, he said, you know, come down afterwards, and, you know, I want to meet your wife, Karen, and, you know, chit-chat. And so we went down and we met him, and you know, it was clear he was very tired after a long day, and he still had to drive home to Orange County, which is could be like an hour drive, and it was pretty obvious he was tired. And we were telling him, you know, hey, we know you're tired. You got to go home. You got to drive. You know, go ahead and go. It was nice meeting you and all stuff. No. He insisted on chit-chatting with us. He brought Bob Miller over to talk with us, and my wife was really, you know, excited about meeting Bob Miller and all that stuff. So anyway, he was just a really, really genuinely nice guy. Never heard anybody say a bad word about him. I never heard him say a bad word about anybody else. He was just one of those type of guys. And really, really sad that that he passed away unexpectedly like that. I know there were some people who said, well, at least he got to see the Stanley Cup. And I, you know, there is certainly some truth to that. He started out with the Kings, even though he was associated with the Angels and the Clippers as well. But right out of high school, he started interning with the Kings. He'd been with their organization for many, 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 many years. So this kind of affected the Kings family a little bit more than the others. And a lot of Kings fans, very saddened by the news, a lot of sports fans in Southern California. So, again, I just wanted to recognize the passing of David Courtney and offer my my sympathies to his family and his wife. Very sad news this week, so I just wanted to mention that.
And as an Angels fan, I remember him well and very sad of his passing. To me, the lockout preventing him from getting his Stanley Cup ring is a pisser.
A lot of Kings fans have echoed that as well. And not being able to
see the banner being raised.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pisser. But, I mean, beyond that is the loss to his family and friends. That's terrible. It's way too soon for a man that had a lot left to give and a lot of people that love him and like him. So with that, there's no easy segue, as you like to
certainly.
Say. But let's move on to the correspondence portion. And with just one, and that comes from constant contributor and good friend of the correspondence segment, Steve Ballard, checking in on the Avalanche. And we have an update on a second period story that Ed reported. He said that Kyle Quincy has signed with the Denver Cutthroats. They have parted ways. Quincy signed on to help out the former LA Kings teammate and mentor Derek Armstrong with the Cutthroats. But
is he
now
coaching that team?
Apparently.
I did not know that.
But now that his dozen-game contract is up, he's leaving it to the other kids to keep things going. He managed 2 goals and 11 points in his 12 games.
Wow.
So,
what do you suppose the I kind of like the nickname Cutthroats, a little bit unique. Is that, what do you think that is? Like a pirate or something?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But it's a pretty kick-ass name, you know, the Cutthroats. As both of you have alluded to before, one of the risks of playing overseas during the lockout is injury, and that has struck Avs goalie Semyon Varlamov, who has now missed the last 4 games for his team in Lokomotiv, after a collision left him with an injured knee. It is not reported to be serious, but for someone playing so well and who is counted on to be the guy for the Avs, not to mention someone that has had knee problems in the past, this is not good news. Avs fans have to be a bit concerned about Matt Duchene after starting off with a great rookie season. His offensive production has slowed. One would think that playing in a lower Swedish league would see his numbers inflate from lesser competition, but instead, we see him with just 3 goals in 17 games. Avs fans who worried about Duchene before have to be truly concerned now, and those that weren't concerned have to wonder what these numbers he's posted overseas thus far. Thanks for the show, as always, and thank you for your contributions, Steve. If you are looking to join the ranks of the fan correspondents, you can do so, correspondence@puckpodcast.com.
All right, let's get on with the emails this week, and we have an email from our listener in Austria, and his name isn't on the email, and I know who this person is, but I don't recall his first name. It says it's on the back. My apologies, I didn't know that. Front to back, you don't see that.
Eco-friendly, my friend.
Mario in Austria. He says, hello, guys. While it's been a while since the last time I emailed you, I've had a very busy real-life stretch, but now it's over. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
His life?
He says, in a very positive manner,
oh,
now
that's
it's
good.
Over. So I'm looking forward to mailing you more frequently again. As this lockout goes on, I feel I have to admit that I have lost a great percentage of interest in this whole circus called the National Hockey Lockout, NHL, get it? Having said that, I heavily disagree with Eddie, siding with the owners. What? I didn't know I was siding with the owners. He continues, personally, I've always been a fan of the so-called underdog. On top of that, I find it hard to side with guys making billions and billions of dollars and then claiming they're losing so much money. Well, if you are losing so much money, how about telling the team to a guy knowing how to turn things around, i.e.
Selling the team.
I'm sorry. How about selling the team to a guy knowing how to turn things around, like Mr. Ilitch in Detroit? The players are as fractured as the fans with this regime, or should I say dictatorship, that Bettman has built since taking over 17 years ago. So I have absolutely no problem with them speaking up against him. When guys like Solani, Taves, White, Crosby, Pominville, and Miller are having enough, it should be an indication that something is really, really wrong in the hockey world. Yes, these guys are making millions and millions of dollars, but they are the product. They are the reason some owners can cry poor while getting super sweetheart deals from city councils to get their arenas. Again, Mario, I don't know if you have me confused with Doug or what, but believe me, I'm not taking sides in this. If I were to pick a side, it wouldn't be the owner's side. It would be the player's side. But I find fault on both sides, so I'm not sure where you got that from. But anyway, he also wanted to give us an update on Michael Grabner, who is an Austrian player playing in Austria. And I did not have this in my notes, so I thank him. He says that Michael Grabner suffered a hip injury while playing over in Austria and will be sidelined 2 to 3 weeks. His contract's going to expire in December. So hopefully this wasn't the last game for our club. So there you go. Mario in Austria with his thoughts on the lockout. He's on the side of the players and also gave us a little nugget on Michael Grabner as well.
Yep. A lot of people seem to think that I am a strong advocate of the owner's side and that the players are evil. And while I certainly can understand the owner's side, my position is, I believe the owners have done more to negotiate, based on just my perception, than the players have. That's why I blame the players for not meeting them halfway. I think the players are being too stubborn and not negotiating strongly enough. That's why. And they're also the ones that are speaking.
Right. We have something to react from them.
I react to outrageous things from idiot players that say stupid things, and I react to that. The owners don't say anything. They're wise, and that's why. But believe me, if some multi-billionaire came out and said, well, I can't be losing, you know, $20 million a year, which is the equivalent of losing $1,000 a year to you and me, then I would be blasting him too. But they're smart enough not to do that. That's the, I think, the disconnect. I also blame both sides. I've said that from the beginning. When everybody was on the player's side and saying the owners are evil, I said, this is on both sides. I still say that both sides are responsible for where we are, and both sides are equally to blame. Our next email comes from an Englishman in Barcelona. His name is Tom, and he says, First off, great podcast. As an Englishman living in Barcelona, I struggle to get decent hockey news. The podcast is awesome for keeping me up to date. No kidding. We have a tough time here in Los Angeles, and we have the Stanley Cup. This time last year, I was in Sweden visiting my girlfriend's family for Christmas. Oh, you poor bastard. An Englishman living in Barcelona, dating a Swedish girl, going, oh, nice. Life has dealt you a tough hand, Tom. And while I was there, I attended my first ever hockey game of my now team, Färjestad BK. I loved every second of it and have since followed hockey almost as much as I follow football, soccer for you guys. I picked the Red Wings as my NHL team, and ended up as tired as hell for work, staying up to watch them in the playoffs last season. I was hugely looking forward to following them this season until the lockout reared its ugly head. Hockey is pretty poorly followed in the UK, and the marketing on behalf of the NHL is terrible. The NFL is gaining a large following now due to the great marketing by the league, and although the NHL sent the odd game to London, the television rights were sold to a subscription sports channel that has a very poor take-up, and as such, the sport just isn't hugely followed. Now with the lockout looking like it will swallow up more of the season, I fear that more and more people will lose interest in such a great sport and simply forget about it and not bother watching when or if hockey starts again. Do you guys think that lockout is harming the sport in the U.S., especially with soccer making an increased impact? And with two lockouts within the last decade, do you think the NHL is being damaged? Luckily, I can get my fix following the Swedish Elitserien, but I can't wait until the NHL hockey is back. Once again, thanks for the great podcast, Tom. You ask a couple questions. Do we believe the NHL is being harmed in the U.S.? Absolutely. There's no doubt about it that fans are losing interest, and the Kings lost, I would say, all momentum that they had coming off of last season, and they will have to start from scratch. Any casual fan that followed the Kings during their Stanley Cup run has since forgotten that the Kings exist and is watching the Lakers, the Clippers, caught up in the drama that is the Lakers. USC, UCLA, etc. The Dodgers, baseball winter meetings are going on. So absolutely. Do we think that the the lockouts, the two lockouts, damaged it overall, of course. I think the trust is gone from the fans, and I think they, until we have a continuous run, like whenever they sign this, if it's a six-year deal, until that expires and they don't have another work stoppage, we're always going to have that hanging over our head of the sword of Damocles, thinking that when this expires, there's going to be another lockout, another work stoppage, and here we go again. So I do think it's harmed the sport, but I think you're absolutely right that overseas, what little fans there were that was gaining, it's going to be very difficult for them to regain some traction over there.
Our next email comes from Jonathan Stallsmith in New Hampshire.
Live free or die.
Jonathan was recently out here. Yes, indeed.
I wish I had.
He says, "Hey, Eddie and Doug, I've been meaning to write to share my thoughts because I think Doug was wearing a little too much of his fan hat in a recent episode." He's actually wearing a Boston Bruins hat right now. He criticized Chris Bartsch's comments that many NHLers need to continue to work after their professional careers because they don't make enough to last the rest of their lives. He then said he wouldn't be okay with Ducks players going to play in Europe during the lockout. To me, it seems that Doug's holding the players to an unfair standard because he thinks from a fan's perspective, not a professional perspective. Yes, the players make significantly more than most of us in a calendar year, but their window to make that money is far smaller as their careers do effectively end by the age of about 30 to 35. If you ever get a chance to watch ESPN's 30 for 30 Broke, do it. It looks at why athletes struggle to save and what happens to the money they earn. When people disparage the players for whining about their salaries, I try to put it in terms of everyday society. Does Prick Boss make more money than Doug? Yes. Could Prick Boss make less and continue to make ends meet? Yes. The rest of us peons do, but we're all aspiring to make that money and one day get to the level of our respective Prick Bosses. That's how a capitalist society works. Prick Boss makes more money than the rest of the employees because he's shown the talent and work ethic to ascend to that pay grade. By the way, well, we'll mention that in a second. What they, for people who don't know, probably wondering what the hell are we talking about if they don't know who Prick Boss is. That's basically Doug's boss who is called Prick Boss because it is a joke and he is like the nicest guy in the world.
That was his request.
Yeah, the greatest boss ever.
Basically. My mom was listening to an episode of the Puck Podcast and heard me call him that and says, how could you say that about your boss? I'm like, he told me to call him that. So what if he listens to that? You're going to get fired. No, go on. So, go on.
Yeah, that's who we're talking about. NHL players also get compensated accordingly. And so long as the public keeps spending $100 a ticket, $30 for a T-shirt, and $10 for a beer, the market value will be there for players to expect the compensation they're getting. As far as players leaving for Europe, that, again, goes along with a business model. If you ask Prick Boss for more money and he says no, then another company comes along and offers you the money you want. Wouldn't you jump ship too? As I said, there is a limited amount of time to make money in professional hockey before one gets too old and too slow. It's unfair to tell a player to be quiet and that he makes plenty of money in his career and then complain that a player has chosen a different employer when that money is no longer an option. It's his right to make as much money as he can when it's available, and we would all do the same in our respective fields. Keep up the good work. You guys have done a great job delivering news during this difficult time. Again, Jonathan in New Hampshire.
Two things, Jonathan. One, I'm absolutely speaking as a fan when I say I don't want the Ducks playing. I couldn't care less if the Florida Panthers went and played overseas. I purely, as a fan, don't want any of the Anaheim Ducks players to get injured and miss any time should the season resume. As for, though, I'm not saying they don't have the right to do it. They absolutely do. I'm just saying I would prefer they didn't as a fan. Now, as for the players only make a certain amount and they don't have a long shelf life in the NHL, I think the concept that if you make it to the NHL for more than a couple seasons, you should be paid enough that you never have to work again is extremely flawed. You can be well compensated in the NHL, but I don't think you should be paid enough that you should expect you never have to do anything ever again in your life. You can just sit and enjoy life the rest of your life. Unless you are a star player that makes a star player's salary, you should expect to have to work when you get done playing or do something else, whether it's broadcasting, whether it's starting a business, coaching, something else to draw a paycheck. And I think that's just to be expected. So to think that these players, many of which, like I said, Chris Bartsch is making $6 million or something crazy before taxes and all that. But it's enough that he can basically choose what he wants to do in life and live a nice life. It's not an option that the rest of us have. And for him to say that this is terrible and don't forget many players have to work after. Of course they do. You're 35 years old. You think you've made enough that you should never have to work again? You can live another 60 years and never do another damn thing? I mean, that's crazy talk. So expect to work unless you're one of the elite players that plays for 10-plus years. Our next email comes from, and thank you for the email, Jonathan. I wish I had met you while you were out here. Next email comes from Joe in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a beautiful part of the world, I'm sure. Home of the sausages and the cheese. If I look half as good as you look, Ed, then we are both in great shape right now. Hey, guys, after skating last night in a weekly pickup game, I saw a few things that should be addressed, and since the NHL lockout news, or lack thereof, is getting pretty tired, I feel this could stir up some interesting conversation for the podcast. I skate in a mid-level beer league in my area, and a majority of the guys in our league have played for a few years, and most played in high school or lower-level college club teams. But the skate I went to last night was geared towards beginners and people looking to develop and improve their skills. It's a pretty great idea to have this set up the way they do. It's an hour and a half of ice time where they have a coach run you through drills, then we scrimmage for the second half. I enjoy having the chance to be in a practice-like environment again instead of just playing games. It's nice to have a chance to work on the basics of hockey. The major thing I notice when skating with beginner adult players is the lack of hockey etiquette. Simple things that the guys who were coached as kids know, but it seems the newer guys just don't know. I don't blame them since they have probably never been told the right way to do things. So I have a short list of things beginners should be taught before ever taking the ice to enjoy this truly great sport. So here are some things, some hockey etiquette. For if you're going to play beginner hockey when you take the ice. Never shoot at the goal when the goalie, or anybody for that matter, has his back to you. When warming
Good safety
up,
tip.
Yep. When warming up a goalie, there's no need to rip a blistering slap shot at his head. You don't look cool doing it. Shoot low so he can get a feel for the ice and properly warm up. If you don't have at least a somewhat accurate slap shot, and most guys in beer leagues don't use it. There is no shame in not having a cannon from the blue line. Most of us have to go to work the next morning and don't want to catch one of your stray knuckle pucks in the chops. Change when you can, not when you need to. The average shift for a hockey player should be only about 2 minutes at most. We all paid for the same amount of ice time. Let's all give each other a fair amount. I don't want to sound like a guy who is discouraging people from trying hockey out. I give adults who are willing to spend lots of money on ice time and equipment and give hockey a try a lot of credit. I love seeing this game grow every year, but I feel there are some simple, unwritten rules that everybody should be aware of. Thanks for keeping the dream alive, and hopefully we will have some hockey to watch and talk more about soon. Joe in Milwaukee. Ed, what do you think about that hockey etiquette from a guy that has played some hockey in his life and sees guys coming out not knowing what and what not to do?
Well, I agree with all of them, and I'm coming from a background where I didn't play hockey growing up. I think it's just basic knowledge. If you get out there, you learn things pretty quickly. I think the one that made me laugh the most was the guys who try and just crush a slap shot during a game and end up shooting it into the net, or I mean, you're like, was that a dump in? What the hell was that? Yeah, it's rare. I've actually gotten to work on my slap shot more recently during games than I probably have in the last 7 or 8 years that I've played. And I've never tried to just crush it. I've always tried to, number one, just put it on net, you know, because really, at that level, the slap shot is not there to beat the goalie. It's there to be on net, maybe get a deflection, or most likely get a rebound. That's where you're mostly going to score. But it does crack me up when there are guys out there that try and just, you know, go for the radar gun, and it's not even close.
Gilmore.
Maybe take a little off, buddy, and put it on net. Yeah, it's not real smart. But I think the most useful thing he said was about the line changes. And that is one of the more frustrating things as a player, especially when you're subbing for someone who doesn't know when to get off the ice at the proper time or makes a horrible change. And now you've got to jump over the boards and haul ass to get back and cover,
right,
you know, the vacancy that he's just left. Yeah, smart line changes, especially during the second period when you have the long bench, is something that is a very subtle thing, but it can be a very important thing.
Change on the transition to offense, not on the transition to defense.
Yes.
And the equal time is one that bothered me a great deal, because I know we all want to win, but we're all paying the same amount, you know? So don't yell at me to get off the ice because you think we got a matchup advantage. This is easy there, Toe Blake. You know, let me play my 2 minutes, and I'll come off when I want. And if I'm overmatched, so be it. You know, I hated seeing some guys, the better guys on the team, get 24, 25 minutes of ice time, and the not-so-good guys getting 12. We all paid the same. Let's play the same. I think there should be an even rotation. And, yes, absolutely, change before you're gassed. Don't come back to the bench with nothing left in the tank and just taking the helmet off and just, because you're going to be back out there in a couple minutes. We don't have TV timeouts here. And now you're gassed the whole game. Come out before it's too late.
And you always know, like, the smart players when maybe you've been out there. Because sometimes you want to get off and you can't. You just get kind of trapped out there. And you'll see a guy who knows you need to get off the ice. And instead of dumping it in and making the change, he'll try and go one on two or three. Then you got a turnover. Meanwhile, your partners have just changed, and now they're coming the other way on a two or three on one. So you always know when somebody does something like that, just dumps it in so you can get off the ice. You're like, that guy knows what's going on. Right. He gets it. So
yeah, and don't ice it to keep us out here.
Yeah, well, they don't have that rule, fortunately, in the beer league. So
yeah, if they ice it, you can't
go ahead
change.
And ice it. Go ahead and ice it. It's not a bad idea. Our final email comes from Kirby Black in Syracuse, New York, our Puck Podcast orderly.
That's right.
Who says, while looking at all those numbers on Forbes.com, that's an article that Doug referred to last week about the value of the franchises. Yeah. Kirby says, got me thinking about what are the relative percentages of the NHL revenue pie? I know things like ticket sales, concessions, parking at the arena are relatively straightforward. But what about things like merchandising on NHL.com, national TV revenue, local TV revenue? Where did the relocation fee that the Jets had go to? Also, within national TV revenue, it would seem like the rich get richer if it's a pay-per-appearance. You only find a select bunch of teams like Detroit, the Rangers, Blackhawks, Penguins, Flyers, and Capitals. Any insight in how those things work would be greatly appreciated. Thanks for your continuous contributions to our lives as frustrated hockey fans. And he says, P.S., an injury to the ulnar collateral ligament of the wrist would cause reduced pincer grip, thumb and first finger. The injury is commonly called a skier's thumb, as in falling on an outstretched thumb while holding ski poles. Somebody had an ulnar collateral ligament injury last week, and I don't remember who it was, but if you do, Puck Podcast orderly Kirby Black is letting you know exactly what that is. As far as the national TV revenue, that's equally distributed amongst all the teams. Just because the Penguins are on every other week on NBC doesn't mean they get more money.
The Coyotes get 1/30th of that money.
As I understand it, the local TV revenue, that's all negotiated individually. So if you're the Rangers and you have a deal with MSG Network, or you own it, I think, certainly you can get more money out of that than the aforementioned Coyotes would on Fox Sports West.
An example would be the Lakers and their current deal, where they got like $4 billion or something from Comcast to start their own network, the Lakers Network here in Southern California.
Time Warner Cable, I believe.
Time Warner Cable, that paid them for their own network. And the Lakers keep every dime of that money. The rest of the NBA can suck it. And the Milwaukee Bucks,
so to speak, yes.
Good luck to you. You know, you can go and negotiate your own $4 billion deal or not. And that's why the discrepancy crops up. And the Dodgers are in the process of doing the same thing. So that's that money, you're absolutely right, goes to the teams, and they keep every penny of it.
Yeah, relocation fee, again, everybody got an equal part of that pie. As far as I would assume the merchandising and stuff like that is also, as far as NHL.com or something like that, I would assume.
If it's an NHL, if I'm just buying an NHL shirt with the NHL logo, I imagine that goes to all 30. But I think if I buy a Bruins hat like I'm wearing now, that money goes to the Bruins.
And I would think Canucks a percentage of it goes to the Bruins. The percentage of it may go elsewhere.
Well, no. Yes, I'm not saying every dime goes to it, but yeah, I don't think the Panthers benefit because the Canucks have a new jersey out and it's selling like hotcakes. I don't think the Panthers are like, well, hot damn, this is great. But I don't know. Maybe it does.
All right, before we wrap up the show, let's go to the news desk and our correspondent Doug Stolhan for the latest on the NHL lockout. Doug.
Well, we are approaching midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. here on the Pacific Coast, and the owners have left the negotiations but are not – the players are still there. So the media is suspecting that there will be more talks tonight. We're not sure when. The podium is still awaiting something to be happening, but that's the latest update, and that's about it. So basically, they're still talking. Nobody's giving any public comments, which is perceived as a good sign. And hopefully we have something very good to report in the near future. And next week we're talking about where's Luongo going to go and all that kind of stuff.
And for the latest on what's going on, be sure to check in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/puckpodcast. Check out our Twitter feed, twitter.com/puckpodcast. And we'll try our best to keep you updated on what's going on, in addition to obviously your normal websites and things that you would visit. Our official website is puckpodcast.com. Check us out, obviously, on iTunes or wherever you like to listen to the show. We appreciate your comments and your feedback. If you want to send us an email, our email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. Want to send Doug a personal email, doug@puckpodcast.com. You can send me one at eddie@puckpodcast.com as well. That's going to do it for this edition of the Puck Podcast. Hope it didn't sound too bad, considering both Doug and I are battling a bug right now. Thank you, as always, for listening. And again, hopefully next week, some encouraging news on what's going on with a potential NHL season. For my partner, Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thanks again for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast.
All opinions expressed on the Puck Podcast are those of the hosts and do not necessarily represent the views of FoxSports.com, 20th Century Fox, or any of its affiliates.